Born in Belfast, Ireland, Wayne Simmons is the author of the horror novels Doll Parts, Drop Dead Gorgeous, Flu, and Fever. He has also written reviews for various online magazines. Wayne currently lives in Wales. Welcome, Wayne Simmons.
Hi, Alan. Good to be here.
Now, before we talk about Flu and Fever, can you tell us a little more about yourself and how you became a horror novelist?
Yeah, sure. I guess, to be honest, I'm something of a lifelong horror geek, to coin a phrase. I have very early memories of watching the old 1980 Hammer House of Horror TV series and a lot of spaghetti westerns when I was a kid. And I collect a lot of comics, you know, action figures, all of that kind of stuff. In fact, I can't actually remember a time when I wasn't into horror, and we're talking about movies, TV, books, the whole works, really. And I suppose, like many people who are into something, you know, so much, it's a logical progression to actually want to get involved some way in what you're into. And for me, that started, as you say, with reviewing. So I reviewed books that I was reading. I reviewed films I was watching. Anything, really, and just wrote for a variety of online magazines, anybody who'd have me, basically. And eventually that kind of progressed again, and I started interviewing some of the writers that I was reading. One of those writers was a guy called David Moody, very popular within the zombies subgenre. And I was basically reading his books at the time, which at the time were self-published. The Autumn series, Hater, the recently re-released Trust book, it's like a sci-fi book. And I was thoroughly enjoying them. I liked how they were character-focused. I liked how they were set within the UK as opposed to the US, which is, I suppose, the norm for most zombie books and horror books at the time that I was reading. And eventually I thought, well, you know, I could have a crack at this myself. So I did that. I basically started work on what was to become my debut horror novel, Drop Dead Gorgeous. Submitted to its first publisher, who is Permitted Press. They were doing a lot of zombie stuff at the time, still are. And everything really, I suppose, grew from there.
Very good. Now, obviously, zombie themes are extremely popular right now. Or is it just my imagination and they're always popular? And either way, why is this the case?
Yeah, I think it's weird because ever since I started writing about zombies, people have said to me, oh, you know, the zombies had its day. It's gonna wane in popularity. And the complete opposite has been the truth. They've just grew in popularity. When I started working Drop Dead Gorgeous, must have been about 2005, 2006, around about that time anyway. And at that time, it seemed like zombies were at their most popular. But, you know, it's got even crazier since then. So I don't think they've been any more popular than they are right now. However, that said, I think they've always been popular. You know, since 1968, when George Romero came around and, set the classic zombie horror flick Night of the Living Dead onto our laps, I think it kind of it set a precedent. But these kind of classic horror staples have always been around, you know, like your werewolves, your vampires, your zombies, your mummies, your boogeymen. They never go away. And I think that's because they represent something that strikes fear within us and, you know, has done for centuries, maybe even thousands of years. Some of these tropes evolve, obviously. You know, we were talking about the 80s before we started the interview. And that era produced the Satanic Panic. You know, anyone who's listening who was around in the 80s would remember all of those things. Whenever you had films like The Omen, and Rosemary's Baby in the 70s and likes of The Exorcist, things like that. And, you know, the 70s and the 80s, in those days, witches were evil and Satan possessed just about anybody. Then the 90s came and you had the New Age movement and, you know, occultic ideas became more popularized, less sinister, I suppose. And nowadays, witches are the good guys. And you've got vampires dating high school kids. and Satan's, you know, I don't know, maybe some misunderstood emo kid somewhere. So, you know, it's kind of an evolutionary process. The trope, the monsters, the mummies, the zombies, the vampires, they evolve and they change to suit, I suppose, the times. But they're always there. And, you know, the basic foundation of those creatures will always exist. Getting back to zombies, why are they so popular? Well, for me, I think they represent the herd mentality. You know, it's that feeling of being alone and isolated, maybe within your family, maybe within your school or your country or society or whatever, when all the odds seem to be stacked against you and there's no way out. And we've all felt like that. Many of us, unfortunately, feel like that, you know, maybe more regularly than we'd like to. And I think zombies is a metaphor. They take that feeling and they amplify it, you know, to the nth degree, and possibly that's why we can relate to them.
Now let's get into your books. What's the plot of Flu and how does it continue in Fever? Who are the main characters and what happens, just kind of in broad strokes?
Well, the Flu series basically tells the story of a group of disenfranchised survivors, or groups of disenfranchised survivors, should I say, in Belfast, Northern Ireland. And they're dealing with a zombie apocalypse. And this time, I guess, the zombie apocalypse has come along because of a killer flu virus. Now, to be honest, I started writing this around the time that swine flu, or is it H1N1 it's known as in the States?
Yes.
Would that be correct? Yeah. Whenever it hit, and everybody was getting quite panicky about flu. And I was watching TV with my girlfriend, and we saw, it must have been a news report coming from South America, because I think it kind of hit South America first, as I recall. And there was, like, you know, either cops or government guys or whatever, and they were dressed in these kind of, like, yellow uniforms, like protective breathing gear. That's how I remember it anyway. And I kind of, it just struck me when I was watching the news of how similar this was to the start of any kind of zombie movie. And I thought to myself, well, nobody's really written a zombie book based on the flu virus, which is probably the most commonly known, you know, ailment, certainly in the Western world anyway. And so I started work immediately. I'd actually been working on Doll Part, which is the sequel to Drop Dead Gorgeous, but I set that aside and started working flu immediately. And I wanted to make it very much, you know, a book that paid homage to all of the great stuff I loved about classic zombie films and fiction, like Night of the Living Dead, like the Moody books, you know, like all of those things. And so for that reason, it really did focus on more working class kind of people. So you had three scenarios. You have two characters who are trapped in a tower block. One of them is an IRA operative called Pat, and he's kind of befriended or rescued a young kind of, right-wing Christian girl, if you like, called Karen, who's, you know, not very worldly wise, has probably been protected most of her life, and really looks to him as some kind of father figure. And it's a very strange relationship between them. There's claustrophobic kind of encounters. There's a mounting tension just from being, trapped together in this apartment block. Made all the more, tense, because all around them, all other apartments were during the latter stages of the apocalypse. The police came and quarantined people who were infected into their own flats. Our apartments. So they're hearing these trapped zombies, if you like, all the time. And it creates this kind of eerie soundtrack of, like, you know, sniffing and grunting and, you know, these people trapped all around them. And so that kind of adds to the whole tension in the tower block, I feel. And then you've got, like, a couple of cops who find themselves in a house, with another two or another several other characters, all very different people. One of them's a taxi driver, bit of a Carly type. Another one's a young punk. He's had more than his fair share of unsavory encounters with the cops over the last number of years. And then a young kind of feisty, you know, girl called Jerry, who I suppose is the crux of the whole series of Flu. She's like the final girl you'd find in slasher movies, if you like. The one who basically is her only hope is to survive and to do anything to survive. So, you know, all of these different characters. And then you have the dwindling military, and they've got themselves locked down in an underground base just outside of Belfast. But they're not like the kind of military you might have expected in other zombie films. They're a very jaded bunch. You know, they're like drinking heavily. They're watching some of the survivors out in the real world on security cameras and taking bets on who's going to survive and kind of like confrontations with the zombies, you know, on these security cameras. So there's all this kind of thing going on. So it's a very kind of earthy, gritty, nasty read in some regards. You know, hopefully it's been successful because of that, because it has real people in it, you know, fronting off against the living dead. And maybe the reader can put themselves into the position of any of these characters. You know, what would there be in such a variety of different people? Fever then takes the story further. Where Flu was set within the city of Belfast, Fever progresses outside of Belfast and moves to the rural parts of Ireland. Again, it's just more survivors. Some of the ones who've you know, who've lasted until or through the first book, return in the second book. And then you've got other ones who come on board as well. And within Fever, you also find out just what happened to cause this virus to mutate, and you get some kind of perspective on that as well. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. And, you know, it doesn't stop with Fever. I intend to write on. As long as people keep reading, I'll keep writing.
Now, let's get to the audiobook editions. I'm curious as to what you will be listening for. These are the first time on audio for these two titles.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I'm just delighted that Michael Kramer is going to be narrating Flu and Fever, I believe, too. As I said, I'm a huge fan of Pulp Fiction. So to have the same guy who worked on a Donald E. Westlake novel to work on my books, that means an awful lot. Michael also did a wonderful job capturing the kind of gritty, earthy, working class vibe of Joe McKinney's Dead City. So I've no doubt he's going to do a similar job on Flu. For me, the voice is very important. I think that Flu and Fever are written with this almost kind of noir style. It's, you can imagine, like, you know, one of those old school kind of noir detective or PIs narrating the book. I'll just be interested to see how Michael kind of works with that narration. I know that Michael's intending to do some work on the accents as well. And we've had an email exchange just in terms of the accents I would see within the particular characters. So it'll be great to see how he works with that. He's certainly done a great job on anything I've listened to before that he's been involved in, and I've no doubt he'll do a great job on these books.
Well, thank you so much, Wayne Simmons, author of Flu and Fever, among other books. These two, available in print, as ebooks, and on audio, from Tantor Media. Thank you so much, Wayne.
Thank you.